I've always kind of steered clear of like the concept of building culture. We hire people who are smart, who are operate with integrity, who are transparent, especially with our customers, and who are collaborative internally. So my theory has always been, you work really hard, you treat people with kindness and respect along the way, you celebrate the wins.
Hello and welcome to the Solar Maverick podcast, where solar meets entrepreneurship and experience. I'm your host, Benoit Thanjan, so let's get into it.
Hi, this is Benoit, your host of the Solar Maverick podcast. I'm really excited to have Laura Pagliarulo on the Solar Maverick podcast. She's the president and founder of Solar REIT. Solar REIT is an innovative US-based real estate company focused on delivering solar and battery energy storage developers and landowners the maximum value for their land and leases. The company is minority and women-owned business and was founded in 2020. And we actually had Laura on the podcast in the past on episode 98. So you should definitely check it out. It's called Innovative Financing Options for Land on Solar Projects. It was released on April 27th, 2021. Laura, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Benoit, good to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's interesting because I think it was during COVID we first interviewed you, and you just recently, I think it was like 9 months to a year since you started the company. And then it's amazing. Now it's been 3 years later. There's been so much growth. You know, congratulations on everything that's been happening with Solar REIT.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible to look back at these past, you know, 3.5 years and what we've accomplished. It's, you know, we had such a small team and were able to build a business and have a lot of success. So I credit that to all the people who I surrounded myself with Solar REIT to get it done. But I do remember that moment in COVID when we had that interview. Our business launched during COVID. So we launched at a time where we raised capital entirely remotely. We raised debt entirely with Zoom and video meetings. And to go from a point where we closed our first fund, which was $150 million. We closed that last year. That, you know, when we first were demonstrating proof of concept to the market, we raised $50 million in equity from ultra high net worth individuals. And then we levered that with $100 million securitization with TIAA, Kreft, Nuveen. And that fund is closed. And to continue to scale the business, at the end of August, we closed on an equity investment with AB Carval, who are fantastic partners. Yeah. And we'll be, you know, that's $100 million initially, up to $250 million. So levered with debt, it's a sizable figure between $700 million and $1 billion to deploy over the next 6 years. So pretty outstanding.
That's amazing. Congratulations. In a very short period of time with the new product, really, as we talked about, if you listen to episode 98, I think it'd also be great. You know, obviously, I know your background really well. But for our audience who we call Mavericks, I've always loved to hear people's introduction of their background, you know, because I'm surprised how different it is from what you see like on public, like LinkedIn or, you know, the website. So it'd be interesting to hear about your background and maybe how you got that way, because you have over 15 years of experience in renewable energies. You worked in a lot of major companies doing different things. And I think it makes it helpful at being now like the founder and president with all those different varied backgrounds to do this creative product that you're obviously going to talk more about on the podcast.
Yeah. So I would say that I've always been passionate about renewable energies, you know, dating back to when I was much younger than I am now. And I'm laughing when you were saying that over 15 years, you know, it's almost 20 now. And that just means we're old, Benoit. At the same time, you know, it really always feels good to work in a field that we feel passionate about. So I always like to say that I grew up at my time at Washington Gas. So I worked at the deregulated division of Washington Gas. And I really learned, you know, I was there for 7 years and I ended up running their deregulated renewable division. And I learned a tremendous amount about power markets at that role. So, you know, retail energy suppliers, you know, just the foundation that I think is critical of, you know, learning how the grid works, capacity, transmission, distribution, how pricing is set, incredibly, you know, important to as a basis, my foundation for just power markets in general. After that, I went to work at SunEd and was brought on to build their community solar business. And as you know, that was deeply involved in community solar now. That was a time when it was very nascent. So this concept of having residential subscribers who could come in and drop sort of this fungible offtake was like mind-blowing to traditional financiers. But just like anything else, it catches hold, and now community solar is mainstream. It's done by the likes of the largest tax equity shops and sponsor equity. And then after that, I went to work at Clean Choice Energy and a fantastic team over there. I was brought on to build their solar business. I spent 4 years there before starting SolarRe with three other founders of the business. So yeah, a lot of great background, but solar and renewable energy in general has always been a passion of mine.
Yeah, definitely. I know we talked about it before since college. And honestly, even over 20 years of experience in renewables, you're still relatively young. So it's just amazing if you think about it, right? You're considered like an old timer.
It's true, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So congratulations on that and following your passions and seeing the growth. Like I've seen it, obviously, personally at your different, you know, work experiences and obviously SolarRe. It would be great if you could talk about like, what are the different products? Why should experienced developers work with SolarRe?
I appreciate that. I know we're chuckling at different types of developers. So to date, SolarRe has closed on the real estate under more than $2 billion of solar and battery storage projects across the country, which is a staggering number. I actually think it's more like 2.5 at this point. We've done business in 15 states across the country. And we've just recently hired three new senior vice presidents of business development in California, Texas, and Colorado to basically work more hand in hand with developers in those regions. And what we do is really simple. Actually, it takes many different forms, but our core products are essentially, we either buy the land, the fee simple interest under solar or battery storage projects that are in construction, or I should say at FNTP or later. If for whatever reason, the landowner, who could also be the developer, does not want to sell the land, we can take assignment of the lease and put an easement over the project area for a defined period of time. And we collect the cash flows. So that's sort of the second option. We call it a lease purchase. And then the third option is similar to an easement lease purchase, except we can structure it as a loan, a real estate, a renewable energy, real estate land loan, and some key differentiators between all three products. But that the loan is more geared towards developers or landowners who are very tax sensitive. And I can talk about, you know, specifics later on. I know we're going to get into some sort of, you know, concrete examples.
High level description, really, like most developers are, you know, focused when they reach talk to the landowner is providing a lease option. And here you're basically offering the developer financial flexibility, right? If the landowner wants something else than a lease option, is that?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. I would say that, you know, I think it's pretty safe to say that 85% of solar out there is in battery storage is on leased land. Well, solar for sure. I think we're seeing a change with battery storage at this point in time, particularly in urban areas. What we have found is, you know, I think utility scale developers have sort of gotten this sense much earlier on, and it's starting to catch on with DG developers, but there's so much more value if you lead with a purchase option as opposed to a lease option. And we typically work with developers who have purchase options in hand that they need to execute, or developers who just by, you know, the nature of things have accumulated land over time and they want to free up cash by monetizing that land. So I'll give you a specific example with a purchase option. Let's say we can add value in one of two ways. And I'll just specifically talk about one that we're working on right now. Purchase option is $2.5 million. The developer, that's the strike price with the landowner. We're actually going to give the developer more than that, $3.5 million based on, you know, we can construct the lease value based on that $3.5 million purchase price. And that scenario, the landowner gets $2.5 million. The developer captures that delta of $1 million, which they're going to use as an alternative source of development capital. So we're starting to see that application across the board. Then there's three core products, but there are just many ways you can kind of slice and dice it based on a particular developer's needs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really interesting. And I know you've talked about this in the past, that it's obviously you're lending at a lower rate for the developer than if they had development capital. How is like the change in interest rates, like a high interest rate environment, impacted your business? I'm sure more expensive than it was before. Same thing, even for development capital at higher. Can you talk about like...
So rising interest rates, I think across the board, have pressure on project returns, generally speaking. And when that happens, you know, developers look for alternative sources of capital. And that's really where our business, we've seen an uptick in deals we've been doing. because we do actually serve as an alternative source of debt capital to a lot of the developers we're working with. And there's a lot of myriad ways that kind of unfolds. But, you know, developers tend to work with us for a number of reasons. And cost of capital, we always offer a fair and very competitive price. And as you know, like dev capital is in the teens, typically, sometimes as high as 18%. Cost of capital is still in the single digits. But beyond that, developers work with us. And it's actually, you know, if you spoke to some of the developers that are repeat partners of ours, which is really about 75% of the deals we've done, that's amazing. And that's something that's a point of pride for me. You know, that's one of my points of pride. But because we're really easy to work with, and I say that, you know, we have made an intentional effort to hire people from the solar industry who have tremendous experience. And the reason for that is we know that developers, their core focus is bringing deals to NTP or constructing projects or, you know, asset management if they're sponsors as well. Most groups don't have time to focus on the real estate. And our team is just very laser focused on, we want to have this business scale. The process needs to be efficient and simple. And really, we need 5 items to close on any deal. So when we launched Solar REIT, we had a keen eye toward removing friction and making it simple. And so far, the partners we've worked with have really valued that.
That's great to hear. And, you know, obviously, retention, as you talked about, is something that's an amazing thing to hear. And I appreciate, too, that you're going to talk about certain examples that you've worked with. Because, you know, obviously we're talking about the theoretical, but I appreciate you like digging into more detail on a specific transaction with a developer. And can you talk about actually the solar loan that you did with David Norbert, who I've known since he first started developing solar? He's also a listener of the Solar Maverick podcast. So
as a listener, hello, Dave. He's a great guy. I like Dave Norbert a lot. So we have done a couple portfolios with Dave in New York. And the most recent one we did were, I believe it was 7 leases across 250 acres, over 50 megawatts. You know, the Norbert Solar is one of the largest developers of solar in New York State. Specifically, you know, we structured these as loans. And there's some benefits to that. But I think just generally speaking about loans, we do our solar land loans, they're mortgages. But there's some key differences here. We are pricing our loans based on the value of the lease, not on the value of the underlying appraised value of the land. So we're looking at the lease, we're taking the present value of the future cash flows, giving it a competitive discount rate. That's sort of the value of the loan. It's 100% loan to value. There are no appraisals required. And one of the main benefits of a loan is that you avoid capital gains taxes. So opposed to a land purchase or an easement purchase, there you don't have to pay cap gains taxes when you're doing a loan / mortgage. I think one of the things, and you know, referencing, I know we put out a press release when this transaction was announced. One of the reasons why Dave and other developers continue to work with Solar REIT is that we're just very efficient. We close the deals in record time. Very little friction to get these things done. I mean, that's something that you would hear consistently across a lot of our repeat developer partners.
Yeah, definitely. That's really interesting that you explained them to go into a specific transaction. I think, you know, kind of helps people understand the solar loan and what you're offering. So I appreciate you doing that. And it's interesting because you also mentioned that you're doing battery storage as well. Like, how have you done a lot of transactions in battery storage? You know, one thing that I'm thinking about too is like, how do you get comfortable? Like, obviously you need long-term contracting, I'm assuming. It's challenging for battery transactions, potentially to get that long-term contracting with the different potential revenue sources. What have you been seeing in battery storage and how much transactions have you worked on or?
Yeah. So we've done a number of standalone battery storage deals. So in our first fund, we were always doing solar plus storage. But with this equity investment from Carval, we have the flexibility to do standalone battery storage. It's been really interesting because a lot of the projects we've transacted on have been in urban areas where, of course, there's a much greater need for standalone BESS systems. Some keys are, unlike solar, a lot of the landowners under these sites, you know, the sites are very specific because if you're going to locate a system in an urban area, the positioning is very important. And the cost of land is very expensive. If you're buying a piece of land in one of the 5 boroughs or in Phoenix or, you know, in LA, you're oftentimes competing with multiple other use options. So we have worked with a lot of battery storage developers to basically execute on the real estate portion of the project. You know, as you know, the land is not ITC eligible. So there's oftentimes a decoupling of the financing of the project versus the real estate. And we've been coming in at FNTP for, I can't tell you who exactly yet, but it will be announced soon for a couple of the larger sophisticated battery storage developers across the country. I think just broadly speaking, it's difficult to site and develop these systems. And there's a lot of challenges, not only in solar, but just broadly speaking, you know, a massive interconnection challenges, particularly difficult because if there's a utility delay in interconnecting for one of these storage projects, you know, losing a summer of revenue is very detrimental to project returns in that instance. You talked about offtake. So I think generally across the board, what we're seeing is some difficulty securing tax equity and debt for these types of projects, largely because some portion of the revenue is merchant. We are actually comfortable with merchant revenue. We do pretty analysis of that revenue stream, and not to bore you with the details, but you know, we're always looking to make sure that our rent, like the lease rates, are within 15% or less of essentially the revenue, year one revenue. But generally speaking, we've really taken a lot of effort to make sure that the transaction of the real estate is simple at a time when battery storage developers are encountering a lot of obstacles to get their projects done. So,
yeah, I mean, that's a huge differentiator, obviously, being able to complete a transaction without some sort of long-term offtake for all the different revenue sources of the battery storage project. Is there a certain technologies for batteries? Is it just lithium ion right now that you'll finance? Or there's any other battery technologies?
Yeah. So the beauty, Benoit, of what we do is that we're totally agnostic to the technology.
Yeah.
We just finance the real estate. It's really interesting. So we come in at FNTP, right? Or obviously later. And some things that, you know, that we're pretty bullish about, you know, we're agnostic to when COD occurs. So in our experience, when a project has reached true NTP, meaning that you have the interconnection, you have discretionary permits, you have construction financing, survey, title, we have yet to see a project not advance to COD. You know, the thing we check is if there's a delta in rent. So our business is based on collecting rent over time. That's how we work. And, you know, COD could be delayed by a year or two. As long as we are continuing to receive rent, we don't have a position. And I think also valuable is the diligence we do is mostly just confirmatory diligence. Because by the time we're stepping in, and you asked about technology, by the time we're stepping into one of these projects, it has already been diligenced by tax equity, by debt, by sponsor equity. We're just checking the boxes here. So I would assume that if your U.S. bank or whoever, whatever sponsor equity, AES, NextEra, whomever, they're looking really closely at the technology. We're just doing the real estate.
Yeah, definitely. That obviously simplifies it. I appreciate you explaining that. It's interesting because we talked about this before, that you're looking to work with experienced developers. Like, can you talk about like what you would consider like a good partner or developer? What are sort of the qualities that you're looking for? Because to be able to scale at the pace that you have are doing is obviously reducing friction, adding value, right, to the developer. But also the developer has to be pretty sophisticated, right? Because if you're educating every single developer, and it seems like now you're, if you could actually talk about like the transaction sizes that you're focusing on now versus before, I think, you know, it'd be helpful to our audience. Because there's a lot of developers who listen to this.
Yeah, no, that's great. So as far as transaction size goes, you know, obviously for our repeat partners, we'll do whatever they bring us. But, you know, given the scale we're looking to achieve at the moment, we really aren't focused on deals that are less than $1 million. You know, our average deal size has ticked up to 3 million. And of course, we've done transactions much, much larger, you know, in the 20 million, 30 million range. When it comes to the type of developer we're looking to work with, they're typically is going to be some sort of expertise. So obviously we want someone who's developed a certain number of megawatts. So, you know, we need to understand that they do know what they're doing. And typically they have some financial expertise. So they understand the value proposition that we're bringing to the table. One of the reasons why we do like to focus on more experienced developers is when we're talking about timeline of things like NTP and COD, obviously our team, you know, has been in this market for a long time, but using realistic expectations of when we think the project will advance, when we think we'll have to deploy capital, that's always appreciated. You know, developers obviously that have run title on their land, you know, beforehand, you'd be surprised. Some people don't do that. Just basic things that we look for before we partner with someone. So today it really hasn't been an issue. You know, I think our average, our developers tend to be between, you know, 10 and 50 people, you know, for the most part. So I'd say small to mid-level dev shops. But of course, there's always exceptions. We've done transactions with some shops that are much larger than that. And, you know, some of the developers we've worked with, you know, people who've spun off from like Brego and others are, you know, can be three or four people and very talented. So kind of case by case.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, that's a great point that it's not just based about people, because you could have like smaller shops that they have great experience, they're A players, and they know how to work with different companies to get things.
You know, it was really five of us at SolarReed for 2 years. And, you know, during that time, we raised money, did a securitization, closed, you know, many deals and got an investment grade rating. So it just depends on the team. The team is essential.
As a leading authority in the solar industry, life gets very busy. In addition to traveling the world as a speaker and for my entrepreneurial ventures, I'm a son, friend, investor, and entrepreneur. And when it comes to delivering a great sounding show for my listeners, I choose Podcast Laundry. All I have to do is record and send, and the rest is done. They do the dirty work of podcasting for me. Yes, social media graphics, quotes, show notes, master editing, and much more. All I have to do is record. So if you're a busy podcaster like me with an engaged audience and want to free up your time to do more of what you love, like going to the gym or spending time with loved ones, go to podcastlaundry.com to schedule your consultation or call 347-871-8273. That's podcastlaundry.com or 347-871-8273.
Yeah, for sure. Can you talk about like what you're looking for? You know, obviously as an entrepreneur, when you build a team, I totally believe like it's all about the team and it's really up to you to be able to attract that team. Can you talk about like what qualities you're looking for to build a team? It's interesting from my perspective to look at, you know, the people that you have on the team. Like I obviously see some former Sun Edison people that I know, like, so it seems like obviously people that you've had a relationship in the past, and it's a small world too in solar community where you could find out about people pretty quickly as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have a lot of pride in the team that we've built. And in fact, when we had our holiday party this year, you know, I was standing up and giving a speech and kind of looking around at everyone in there and just thinking, oh my gosh, like where we've come. I mean, when we launched this business, we were sitting on another founder's frigid porch, like four of us in the middle of COVID, you know, without a roof. It was like raining and snowing and we had these space heaters and ski gear on, and now we are where we are. So when I'm looking for people, I've always kind of steered clear of like the concept of building culture. We hire people who are smart, who are operate with integrity, who are transparent, especially with our customers, and who are collaborative internally. So my theory has always been, you work really hard, you treat people with kindness and respect along the way, you celebrate the wins. But we have taken a lot of time, you know, like when we've mapped out sort of the roles that we need fulfilled, a lot of time to find the right people to fill those seats. And the one thing, you know, there's some new competitors coming into this space and, you know, we have a pretty significant moat around our business, but my thought has always been, you know, the one thing your competitors cannot replicate is your team and your culture. And I'm really proud of what we built here. And we just actually hired some really great new talent. You know, I mentioned the three BD folks, but also someone who's doing who's our SVP of corporate finance, who just worked at AES and Fluence, you know, really good quality, kind, smart, hardworking people to join the business. So that feels good.
Yeah, definitely. That's amazing to hear. And I think all companies should try to, you know, basically find those qualities in people. And it's amazing to see. I always like, I'm laughing because I feel like I always see a press release from SolarReed about new additions. So I remember when it was just the four of you, and then now to see the rapid growth and obviously assets deployed, right? But also to see the people aspect of it. So that's great.
Hopefully we're done hiring for a while, Benoit. Okay, I'd like to say that we're done. I think we have one more announcement and then we're done. As long as, you know, we've had really good track records with retention, but.
Oh, that's great. Retention is challenging, especially in renewable energy. I feel like, you know, there's so much competition for talent. So that's kudos to you because like you have to attract that talent, right? like they have to believe in your vision to, and what you're doing to be able to come. So congratulations to you on that.
Thank you.
Can you talk about maybe how the Inflation Reduction Act has impacted your business?
Yeah, I would say that just generally speaking, you know, rising tides lift all boats, as an expression that we hear across the board. We have just seen a tremendous amount of new development happening, you know, partially due to IRA. It's nice to see that on one hand, when you have certain subsets of projects that, you know, the returns are being squeezed due to rising interest rates. On the other hand, you have projects that are getting additional benefit because perhaps they're in, you know, lower income areas or, you know, certain targeted areas where the IRA really helps the returns. But for us, you know, I think it's just more the market is growing and there's no surprise there. I mean, it's like year over year growth in solar and storage. You know, that's the market that we target.
Yeah, definitely. For sure. The IRA is obviously creating a lot of opportunity for all of us. Can you talk about right now, like what states have you closed like the most transactions with David Norbert?
I love that you keep mentioning him.
This is actually to get extra points with him.
The man who doesn't like press. So
I'm trying to get him out of his shell because he's doing amazing things.
You know, broadly speaking, solar and storage has grown. I think it was something like 50% since 2022, which is incredible. Most of our work to date has been in the East Coast, Mid-Atlantic, and North Carolina, and those regions, primarily because that's where our team was sitting. You know, our office is based in Virginia, right outside of DC. We have BD people in New York, but we have closed deals, for example, in Texas and California and Hawaii. The decision to hire BD folks in those other states is really to open up those markets and work hand in hand with the developers out there. So, you know, we are focused across the country and we're going to get some additional diversification. We've been pretty, the 15 states we're in has been a result of really 1.5 salespeople, BD folks over the past few years. So I expect that we'll do more transactions and, you know, Illinois, we're going to go deep in California and Texas, Arizona, you know, some states out west.
Yeah, definitely. Especially as you have a bigger business development team. That's amazing to hear. That's only 1.5 person to be able to do, you know, that much.
It's pretty incredible. I agree with you, but some help will be nice.
Oh, for sure. You're excited to have that help coming on board. So that's great. And then just to get your perspective too, I mean, we've talked about a lot of different things. You know, we're almost at the end of our interview. What trends are you seeing in the renewable energy industry? You kind of talked about some of them, but it would be great to like kind of, you know, you answering the question and from your perspective, because I think you see things from a very unique perspective.
I would say, you know, it's funny, we were sort of discussing this in the pre-interview. You know, I think one thing that is true that I love about our industry is that the rules of doing business are constantly changing. And one thing I really love about being in solar and renewables broadly is that everyone who has succeeded in this space, I don't love the term solar coaster, but it does reflect the fact that the people who've been here for a long time are adaptable and are very good at adjusting to whatever rules are out there and the changes in the environment. So I think you've seen this across the board, but one of the benefits of where we sit at SolarEed is that, you know, we talk to a large swath of developers across the country, and everyone is experiencing different market-based challenges based on the state that they're in. But I think consistently across the board, I was trying to think of a positive trend, Benoit, but just a lot of issues with interconnection, utility interconnection, rising interconnection costs. We actually have been brought in to, you know, for the real estate financing to actually help fund increased interconnection costs. Because, you know, obviously we come into FNTP, oftentimes developers are using the capital they get from us to pay interconnection, and we are agnostic as to when COD occurs. But that interconnection trend is something that we're seeing across the board.
Yeah, I think that's really valuable to like our audience. And I think we've all been experiencing it. And that's interesting too, that you're actually helping fund that at a lower interest rate than conventional development capital. And I mean, it's just to me, like there has to be something to expedite interconnection permitting, like all these things that we've been talking about for years. And yeah, it's interesting, but it seems like everything's just taking too long. And
yeah, it's almost like supply chain demands have kind of lessened, but interconnection constraints and costs have really increased. So just we're seeing a lot of that.
Yeah, definitely. And anyone who's been in the obviously solar industry has to be extremely flexible because everything's changing so quickly. It's not like your normal industry. And that's why a lot of companies go out of business pretty quickly. There's a lot of, failed companies that we've both been a part of.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think one of the things that I love about being in renewables, so it's not a zero sum game, right? So, with pharmaceuticals, for example, in order to win market share, you have to steal it from someone else. In solar and battery storage, there's so much potential out there. There's plenty of pie to be had across the board. So that also feels really good.
Oh yeah, that's huge. I mean, I never look at anyone as competition because I'm like, there's so much opportunity for everyone. That's a great point, Laura. I appreciate you mentioning that. And then just to talk about quickly, obviously, what suggestion, the Solar Maverick podcast is about solar and entrepreneurship. What have you learned being an entrepreneur? And you've been an entrepreneur within large organizations as well. What would be the major advice you would give to someone who's looking to start a company in the renewable energy space?
That's a great question. I think that you're right. I have had sort of entrepreneurial roles within larger companies, and this is the first time that really hung my own shingle. I think the first thing is surround yourself with people who are very smart and that you trust. So Laura Klein is my CFO and COO. And, we are different sides of the same coin. And I would never have been able to do this without her. So she's instrumental in the business, as are others. But I would say that you have to be comfortable with a lot of unknowns. So there's a lot of risk. There's always things that are going to come up that you have not anticipated. But looking forward, trying to look around corners. Two of the other founders gave me this piece of advice early on, and I didn't quite know what they meant. But they said that they're serial entrepreneurs. And they'd said that about a year from now, you're going to say, why did I do this?
Yeah, for sure.
Why did I decide to do this?
Yes.
And just know that we all feel that and that it gets better. And that was absolutely the truth, because I did have that moment of why did I do this? And just like anything, it's also, significantly rewarding. But I think the personality is such that you have to be comfortable with risk and really be comfortable with unknowns. So.
Yeah, that's great advice. I appreciate you sharing your wisdom, years of experience, obviously, in the space. If our audience wants to learn more, who we call Mavericks, about Solar REIT or you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, they can reach out directly to me. That's laura@solarreit.com. I think that's probably the response I would give. I'm sure my marketing people would have a different response, but you can either ping me on LinkedIn or you can just email me directly.
Yeah, and we'll have that in the notes of the podcast. This has been an amazing interview, Laura. I appreciate you making the time. And I think it would be great for a lot of people to listen to the first episode 98 and this. And I think our listeners will learn a lot. So I appreciate you making time out of your busy schedule. By the way, the last time I said, I'm excited to hear the progress the next year, 3 years. So I'm going to say that again. It's just the beginning of a lot of growth that's going to happen in the future. And I wish you the best of luck on it.
Thanks so much, Bedoy. It's great to be here. Always good to talk to you.
Great talking to you. Thank you again.
Thanks for listening to the Solar Maverick podcast. The Solar Maverick podcast is brought to you by Renew Energy. We're a solar development and consulting firm. If you believe that this podcast is adding value to you, please give us a 5-star review and share with those that you think could benefit from this information. Please email all questions, suggestions, and feedback to info@renewenergy.com. That's info@renewenergy.com. The Solar Maverick podcast is produced by Podcast Laundry and executive produced by Benoit Thanjan and Kevin Y. Brown.